welcome to Real Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 8th of May 2023 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I'm very pleased to say we have a special guest host with us today for Real Britannia. We have Laura Towler, the Deputy Leader of Patriotic Alternative, which you can find at patrioticalternative.org.uk, and you can also find her tea shop at grandmatowlers.co.uk. Laura, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sven. I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, obviously, we're pre-recording this. We got the coronation coming up over the weekend, and I'm quite interested to actually see all of that, see the crown jewels and the golden coach and all of the great majesty that Britain used to have, basically. And I think we're one of the only countries that still actually has a coronation of our king, and although it's a constitutional monarchy and the king really doesn't have very much say, he's just a figurehead really, I'm quite interested to see what the ceremony is. Obviously I'll be talking about this on the Monday, I expect, in the Daily Nationalist, and as I say, this is being pre-recorded, but we have got some other news to get into as well. But I mean, just before we start, what are your thoughts on the upcoming coronation?
Well, me and Sam had a bit of a debate about it on Tea Time. So it's up on my Odyssey channel if anyone wants to see that, because Sam thinks that we should just basically ignore it because, like, the monarchy is anti-white and there's all this globalism and WEF stuff and paedophilia and all this stuff in the royal family. And he's like, we shouldn't celebrate it. But it's my opinion that I don't think that British people should have to miss out on things that are to do with the structure and organisation and hierarchy in our country. And I think a lot of the people who are out celebrating over the weekend are patriotic British people. And I'm talking about, you know, ethnically British people, not paper British people. And I do think it's an opportunity for us to show some pride in our country. I think an element of that is manufactured, but I think there's this underlying ethnic element to it as well. I mean, to prove my point, people are putting up flags of the Union flag and people are complaining. And the fact that they're complaining about that, and it's mainly, you know, foreign people like Ash Sarkar and David Lammy, et cetera, et cetera. The fact that they're complaining tells you that there is an ethnic element to it. So I think that we should celebrate this weekend. We shouldn't celebrate King Charles as an individual. I don't think he's worthy of that role at all. But I think that we should take it as an opportunity to come together with our people and celebrate our country and who we are as a people. So I have a positive feeling about this weekend, but I know that many nationalists have a more negative feeling about it.
Well, I think it's also about respect for tradition as well. I mean, we may not be very impressed with the current king, but it's all about the monarchy, isn't it? I mean, this is a ceremony that's gone on for well over 1,000 years, probably has elements from before that are actually included within it. So it's really showing respect for our traditions more than anything else. Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to seeing all the pomp and majesty of it all. And yeah, it's nice to see people being very patriotic and waving their flags, even if they don't quite understand the ethnic component of that patriotism. But yeah, it's still something that's good to see. It's something that we do very well as British people. But getting to some of the news that I wanted to talk about, I mean, first off, I just wanted to bring up this news story about Andrew Bridgen and the fact that he's been expelled from the Conservative Party. And I've got a little report here from politicshome.com. MP Andrew Bridgen has been expelled from the Conservative Party following the recommendation of a disciplinary panel. A Conservative Party spokesperson confirmed today that Bridgen was expelled earlier this month. They said in a statement, Mr. Bridgen was expelled from the Conservative Party on the 12th of April following the recommendations of a disciplinary panel, and he has 28 days from this date to appeal. And you obviously think, well, this is the Conservative Party. Why would we be interested in the Conservative Party? But Andrew Bridgen has spoken up about the excess deaths that we've had from the COVID vaccine, which I think is a very, very commendable thing to do, a very brave thing to do, because he's obviously been kicked out of the party for this. Bridgen tweeted this afternoon that his expulsion had been under false pretenses and that the Conservative Party had been sure to make an example of him. He said, this is an issue of freedom of speech. No elected member of parliament should ever be penalised for speaking on behalf of those who have no voice, he added. And he's referring there to the people that have been harmed by the vaccine and also harmed by the lockdowns. The MP for North West Leicestershire had the whip removed in January after comparing the COVID vaccine rollout to the Holocaust. On Twitter, Bridgen had said that the vaccines are causing serious harms and it is the biggest crime against humanity since the Holocaust. And it wasn't him that was actually saying that. He was quoting a Jewish representative, a representative of the Jewish community that had actually said this, that said it was the biggest crime against humanity since the Holocaust. So he was literally quoting somebody else. But Chief Whip Simon Hart said at the time that Bridgen had crossed a line with his comments and caused great offence in the process. He added, as a nation, we should be very proud of what has been achieved through the vaccine programme. Misinformation about the vaccine causes harm and costs lives. And at the time, Bridgen was serving a 5-day suspension from the Commons, having been found to have breached rules on paid lobbying and declared interests. And of course, they've also been trying to, they made, when this first came out, they made allegations that he had made improper advances upon a woman who used to be a UKIP lobbyist. So they tried to smear him with some sleaze at first, and then they started calling him an anti-Semite because of this, because he was obviously quoting this Jewish fellow who was saying that these vaccines have had a terrible effect and lots of people have died. I mean, that's what he's pointing out there. But of course, you're not allowed to compare the Holocaust to anything else whatsoever, and apparently not even if you are Jewish. So there's lots of elements here that are coming into this. There's his bravery and his courage in speaking out about the COVID vaccine. There is the fact that he is genuinely speaking up for people that have no voice because they're accused of misinformation, disinformation. They're being silenced on Twitter, or it used to be a lot worse than it is now, obviously. People were removed from Facebook, removed from Twitter, and he is genuinely speaking up about this, and he's taken a huge amount of flack for doing it, and now he's been kicked out of the Conservative Party. And as I said, I just want to bring this up as an example that there are still some members of parliament that actually have some integrity. And I'm just very pleased to see that he has this integrity. And I do think it was pretty predictable what's happened since then. Any thoughts on this that you want to add to that, Laura?
Yeah, I think the issue is that he's, you know, mentioned the one event from history that nothing is allowed to be compared to, or nothing is allowed to be as bad as, or even close as bad as. So that's why it's like, you know, whenever you mention the Jewish Holocaust, it's like, oh, you're not allowed to say that. If he'd have said, you know, it's as bad as the Holodomor, it's the worst thing since the Holodomor, that would have been perfectly reasonable. There's a lot of, like, you know, clutching pearls, because he mentioned, even though, you know, you said it was someone else, he mentioned that. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, I'm kind of glad that it's happening, because hopefully he will click over it, and hopefully it will send a message to other people, like, you know, look, if you speak out about something, there is no freedom of speech in this country. And even though what he said hasn't been debunked in, like, a methodological and intelligent way, it is just shut him up. And hopefully that will trigger something in the people who are watching. I mean, with regards to the vaccine, there are excess deaths. And I know that people have requested information on whether those excess deaths were vaccinated. And then the government responded back by saying it's not in the public's interest for us to reveal that information. How on earth is it not in the public's interest? I mean, people are literally dead. Surely looking at why they died is in the public's interest, so it doesn't happen anymore, which sends a massive red flag to me. You know, they're obviously covering something up here. They could just respond and say, no, they're not, or some of them are, but they're not. They're, like, not in the public's interest. So, I just hope that this whole episode sends a message out there that, you know, there is no freedom of speech in the country, and there is something dodgy happening here because they're trying to silence people who talk about it.
Well, yeah, it's the same way that they tried to shut down anybody else, isn't it? They it's ad hominem. You know, they're calling him an anti-Semite. They're calling him a conspiracy theorist. And yet the guy is coming up with all the documentation to prove what he is saying. And it's people that have written to him and said, well, we've got all these vaccine injuries. that he is that's caused him to actually do this. It's not that he's just making this up, or he's trying to do it to further his own cause or to get followers or what have you. I mean, the guy is an MP, and what he says should have weight to it, and they should be investigating what he has to say. And of course, their response is just to start calling him names, anti-Semite, conspiracy theorist. I'm surprised they didn't call him racist either. And there is a crossover between the anti-vaxxers and people that are questioning the lockdowns. There's a crossover between that and also with nationalism, because obviously we're concerned about the nation. Anything that harms our people, we're concerned about. And it does look like the vaccine harmed our people. Obviously, the lockdowns did. We still have to see what the effects were on our children that weren't able to go out and socialize in the ways that they normally would. Also on their education. So there is a crossover from that to nationalism. And I wonder whether people that are followers of Andrew Bridgen, whether that might also encourage them to discover some of these other nationalist truths. And of course, that's one of the reasons why the other MPs are calling him all these names and why they've kicked him out of the Conservative Party. And his wife is also talking about writing a book about how that she was called, there was racist behaviour to her. I think she was Serbian or something like that. So she's talking about writing a big expose on the Conservative Party as well. So this Andrew Bridgen story is still going on. And also, if you follow him on Twitter, you can see he does say a lot of sensible things, and he's starting to put out little streams of his own now as well. And Jacob Rees-Mogg, he also does streams. And I think all of this is sort of seeing what the alternative media are doing, seeing what nationalists are doing, and then copying it. You know, you've even got the BBC putting out podcasts now, and I think a lot of it is because of the popularity of the alt media. Well, there was a poll that has come out ahead of the King's coronation that I thought was particularly interesting as well. It's put out by Saatchi and Saatchi, the advertising company. And they say 2/3 of Britons are less proud of the United Kingdom than they were 5 years ago, according to a new YouGov poll published ahead of the King's coronation. Researchers found that 68% of people feel that the United Kingdom is generally in decline, and over half said their standard of living is worsening. And this is really a condemnation, surely, of the government and of the state. If people are less proud of the United Kingdom than they were 5 years ago, it's got to be because of the way that the state is behaving, surely. I mean, what do you make of what this poll has found out here, Laura?
Yeah, you have to be careful with polls because they're not made to give you a view of what the opinion think. They're made to influence what the opinion think. And I remember a poll from a few years ago where it said something like, was it 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 people think that you don't have to be white to be English? Which, of course, is ridiculous because English is an ethnicity, so all English people are white. But I went through and I looked at the poll, and they'd asked like incredibly leading questions. They'd added it up incorrectly anyway, so it was 63%. But they'd asked questions like, they'd started off by saying that it was racist to think that, and then asked what people think about it. So you have to be careful with these polls because I do just think they want to try and make people think that the widespread view is something that it isn't, maybe because you'll be ostracized socially if you don't have that view, or you'll be, I don't know, you'll get suspended from social media, or you'll get fired from your job. And with this one, the title to me says less proud of the UK. That makes me think like less proud of being British, less proud of your people, less proud of your nation. But then when you go through the questions, I mean, it's talking about standard of living worsening. Now, I'm British. I'm very proud to be British and English as well. But I would agree that the standard of living is worsening. I would agree that the country is divided on many things. But I'm still proud to be British. So I feel like the title is quite misleading there. I mean, it does talk about the ceremony and whether people are, you know, looking forward to that or not. It says 75% of people aged between 18 and 24 saying they don't care very much or they don't care at all. Again, you know, that's younger people. I would think that if you asked older people, they would be more proud of it. And you also do have to bear in mind that this poll might not have been asked to actual British people. It's probably people of all ethnicities, you know, people who have a British passport or people who were born here because their parents migrated to the country. So as these polls go on and as the demographics change more drastically in the country, I would say that less and less actual British people are being asked these questions. And if we look at the opinions towards immigration, British people have always wanted a reduction in immigration from the Second World War to the present day. However, the number of people who are against immigration, according to these polls, is getting less and less and less. And that's because they're asking more and more and more foreign people. So anything like this, I would just say, take with a pinch of salt. Don't just believe the title. Go in and actually look at the full study yourself, not just the newspaper articles about it, because they're trying to influence public opinion.
Yeah, I tried to get a copy of the actual survey, but it hasn't actually turned up in my email yet. Saatchi and Saatchi said, "Oh, just email this address and we'll send you a copy of it." But they haven't actually sent me a copy, and it causes so much confusion where they don't actually make a distinction between a British citizen and someone who is of British ethnicity, which is obviously two different things. A British citizen is somebody that has a British passport and they can be of any ethnicity, but a British man or a British woman has to be of British ethnicity, which implies that they're white. So there is this confusion that is introduced there. And I wonder whether where it says about two-thirds of people are less proud of the UK, well, could that be because of all this propaganda out there that is telling British people that they should be embarrassed about their past, that they oppressed people in their past, instead of telling the British people that we brought all sorts of technology to the rest of the world, we brought the wonders of civilization, we got rid of things like the burning of wives after a father dies in India. We got rid of human sacrifice in Africa. We brought railways. We brought universities. We taught people how to read and write that didn't know how to read and write. And we introduced the idea of democracy to them. And eventually, when they were capable of running their own countries, we handed their own countries over to them. And instead of saying that, we say, well, we enslaved black people and all of our wealth comes off the hard work of black people who weren't remunerated for it. So of course people end up feeling less proud of their country when they're not given a rounded view of history. And it's not like this is a fringe thing that does this. It's all over the media. It's all over the schools. It's all over the education system now, where white people are told to be ashamed of their behaviour in the past. And I think when you look at the way that we are now, we put in all these diversity quotas, we brought in all of these laws to prevent people from speaking critically of any of these other groups. And that shows that we're a very charitable people. We're a very merciful people, and we're concerned about these other groups. If we weren't concerned about these other groups, we wouldn't do any of that. We wouldn't allow these groups to come into our country and give them citizenship and allow them to share in our heritage and share in our name, which is rather like a family adopting somebody and then giving them their name, even though they're not actually from that family. And you wouldn't do any of that if we were this horrible, mean, oppressive people that just wanted to take all the resources from other countries and use them to better our own lives and not the lives of the people in those countries. So that is going to leave people feeling less proud. The survey conducted by YouGov on behalf of advertising company Saatchi & Saatchi found that 73% of Britons thought the country was more divided than it was a decade ago. Well, diversity is division, isn't it? Once you introduce diversity into a country and it becomes multicultural, it is divided by definition, isn't it? And there's a good verse that I often quote from the New Testament where Christ says, "A house divided against itself will not stand." So once you introduce diversity into a country, it breaks up the sense of community. It breaks up the sense of civic responsibility. They've done studies which show that you're less likely to trust your neighbours, even if your neighbours are of the same ethnicity as you. Just the fact that you have these other groups that are living there within that community, within that territory, means that you're less likely to trust people. So of course the country is more divided than it was a decade ago, and it's the government that are responsible for this. We're physically divided by having these other groups there. And of course, they're probably trying to imply here politically divided, people on the left or people on the right. But the fact is, we are literally divided up within our own countries by all these different nations that we now have living here. Smaller versions of nations, but that's what it is. It's not just English, Welsh, Scots and Northern Irish, but we've got representatives of nations from all over the world that are now living in this country and living within their own communities. And that is what divides the country. And I think one of the reasons why they do it is because it prevents us, or it makes it more difficult for us, to unite together against policies that we can see are harming our people. Because we have all these other groups here, it's much more difficult for us to unite together with amongst our own people, because we have this division. Any thoughts on that, Laura?
Yeah, well, I saw with the coronation, just to go back to that briefly, I don't know if you saw like the advertisement for it, and it had four different things, and one of them said diversity and community. And I'm thinking to myself, that doesn't even make sense. Like, if you've got diversity, you don't have a community. You've got lots of separate communities because people go off and do their own thing. I mean, that's why we have Bradford, and that's why we have all these different areas in London where people live next to people who are the same race as them. And that's why we have a Chinatown in every city across the country, because people tend to stick to themselves. So you can't have diversity in community. It's like this really sort of naive vision that like life is a Disney film and everyone just comes together and shakes hands with each other and, you know, toss some marshmallows over the barbecue. It doesn't work like that. When you have diversity, you don't have community. You have communities, multiple little groups that do their own thing and disagree on a lot of things, and there's a lot of conflict there between those different groups. I mean, the Black Lives Matter movement showed that you don't have community, you have separate communities, and they disagree with so many different things. So I just think there's this like really, they use these empty words that don't even mean anything because they sound nice. Diversity and community, it doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, I think that's good points there. I mean, people always naturally want to live amongst their own people. They feel most comfortable when they're among their own people. And that's what we see these other groups advocating for. When they say we want to see more representation, we want to see ourselves represented in television programs, we want to see ourselves represented as teachers and judges, what they're effectively saying is, I am more comfortable when I see more of my people around me, which is just a natural feeling. Yet we're told that that's wrong if you feel that when you're white. If you're black, it's great. And that is to be encouraged, and it's to be encouraged to be standing up for Black Lives Matter. But if you're white and you say, well, I want to be surrounded by white people, I want to see white people on the television, you're going to be accused of being a white supremacist for saying that. But it's just natural that we always feel most comfortable when we're amongst our own family. They're the people that we can feel most at home with, that we can talk to the easiest, that we feel safest among. And it's the same with the extension of that with your ethnicity. You're always going to feel at your safest and at your most content when you're amongst your own people. So when you have diversity and you have all these different groups living together, it means every single one of these groups is going to be on edge because they're not exclusively surrounded by their own people. And of course, we tell ourselves that that isn't so, but instinctively we feel that. I mean, this is the reason why in Britain now people lock their doors. People never used to lock their doors when we had a homogenous country. In Finland today, which is still very, very highly homogenous, in the areas that are still 99.9% Finnish, they don't lock their doors. If somebody loses their wallet, then it's going to be handed in. So you'll have people in Britain that are saying, well, I love diversity, and I'm not against these people in any way at all, and it hasn't affected the way that I live, and I trust everyone just as much. And then you can say to them, well, do you leave your front door unlocked? And they'll say, well, no, I don't leave my front door unlocked. And the reason for that is because instinctively they know that they're living in an environment where not everybody can be trusted. Whereas it's different to that when you have a homogenous community. I think I've seen some of the advertising you're referring to there, Laura, as well. I mean, they do it all the time, don't they? They use these two words together that cancel each other out. You know, when they're talking about us together as a nation, and nation goes back to natal birth, it means people of a shared ancestry. So how can they talk about multiple groups together actually being one nation? It's not. It's a group of smaller nations all living together within one territory. The findings echo research carried out by think tank the Resolution Foundation at the end of last year, which argued that 2022 was a disaster for UK living standards. According to the Foundation's survey of 10,000 adults, three quarters reported that they were trying to cut back on overall spending, and 45% of respondents were worried about their energy bills. So this is a direct result, I think, of what's going on in the Ukraine, interfering in the Ukraine, preventing the rest of Europe from being able to get its oil and its gas from Russia, which effectively means that Russia then sells its oil and its gas to India at a higher price because it was selling it to Europe at a price lower than the market value. So they're now selling it to India, and India is then sending it back to Europe at an even higher price. So gas and oil has gone up because of us getting involved in the Ukraine, and that's responsible for this huge increase in bills. So again, this is down to government policy that has caused this. It has been a disaster for living standards. I think it's people have had to keep their heating switched off. You've got mold that's been growing in people's houses. I know the government have sent out money to help people out with this, but the prices are going to stay at that high rate, and the help from the government with that is eventually going to stop. Any thoughts on what's happening here with this with these energy bills, Laura?
Yeah, I think the people who are impacted the most by the government's decisions are us. And I don't mean the government in that, and, you know, people who are well off. I mean working class people who are struggling. I mean, the government are having to give out money to people who are on a low income. Somebody I know received £300 last month, which is like, I think it's maybe if you get universal credit or if you consider to be on a low income. That, I mean, they're failing so much. They're having to give money or cash or whatever you want to call it to people to help them live in this country, to be able to buy food and stuff. There's a record-breaking number of people using food banks as well, and it's not just necessarily people who don't have jobs, it's people who, you know, do work, but they can't afford to keep up with the increase in energy bills, and then like fuel is all over the place. It's up one minute and then it's down the next minute. And then the countries that, you know, we're supposed to be putting these sanctions on, they're not struggling at all. They seem to be absolutely thriving. And the government I know it's an obvious take, but they really just do not care about the British people at all. They don't care about us being demographically replaced. They don't care about, you know, doing sort of like scientific medical experiments on us for things that are not tested. They don't care about our freedom of speech and our ability to speak out about what we want. They don't care about us having any democratic representation in the country. You know, if someone does speak out, like Andrew, who we spoke about earlier, he'll get silenced and sent away. They just hate us. They absolutely hate us. And the sooner that British people can realise this and begin to, you know, embark on some sort of level of self-sufficiency and create our own communities and stop relying on the system and start relying on each other and build up this network of people and support each other, which is, you know, the main thing that we're trying to do at Patriotic Alternative. I just don't see things getting any better, really.
Yeah, they're more concerned about the borders of Ukraine, aren't they, than the borders of Britain. I mean, everybody's concentrating on this illegal immigration, and I think it was 40,000 people last year. But far worse than that is the million visas that were handed out by Boris Johnson's government. So you've got legal immigration, you've got over a million people, and those could have been family visas as well. So while people are struggling to afford to pay their bills, the government is still shipping more and more and more people into the country, causing these huge demographic changes. Well, all of this comes ahead of the King's coronation, which will take place on May 6th at Westminster Abbey in central London. Polls have shown that much of the British public feel indifferent about the ceremony, with 75% of people aged between 18 and 24 saying they do not care very much or at all about the event. 35% of the more than 3,000 adults surveyed said they do not care very much about the event, and 29% do not care at all. So I think they're basically trying to say, well, we should get rid of the royal family. And this has been going on for a long time, hasn't it? Trying to get rid of British traditions. We already have this constitutional monarchy where they're not able to actually take part in politics. And you can see here with this younger group of people, they're the ones that really don't care very much at all about our traditions. Well, why is that? Because they've been taught that the king, why should he have all of this? It's like the politics of envy. I think when they're at school, they're saying, well, look, why should the king or the queen have all this wealth that they've got? It's obscene. It's unfair. They weren't elected to actually be king or queen, and they're not told about the traditions that we have. I mean, you can see that from these people that are saying, not my king. well, you don't get a choice in that. The, you know, the king is part of the royal family, and they have the right to rule. In years gone by, they led the army into battle. Princes would be right at the front of the army. They would lose their lives. And they're supposed to set a very good example. They're supposed to set the best example of a man of that particular ethnicity that there is, or of a woman. They're not supposed to gamble. They're supposed to live up to high moral standards, and they're supposed to, and this is why they have the wealth. This is why they have the best education and the best of everything, so that at least one of us gets a chance to have the best of everything. And then they've got no excuse for being a bad person, because they've had the very best of everything, and they're supposed to set an example. And this is the way that our society was run for thousands of years. We had a monarchy. I don't think children today or young people today understand that. They're just told that democracy is wonderful. When if you compare the monarchy, you compare somebody who knows that they're going to rule the country and knows that they're nothing without their subjects, and they're subjects to him, which like sort of members of his own family. And he knows he's going to rule them for all of his life. So he's brought up to do that. And he's not going to try and increase his wealth, because he's got the whole country to himself. And you compare that to somebody with democracy the way that we have it, where somebody gets voted in every 4 years. I mean, that person that's voted in there for 4 years, they could be just wanting to feather their own nest, aren't they? That, you know, they're going to want to be doing what's best for them in a certain way. I mean, they could try and be selfless and do what they can for the country, but you can see that you know, the way that this was set up in the first place with the monarchy is what's natural. And if you look in the animal world as well, you'll always have like an alpha male that runs the pride or that runs the pack. And it's the same thing. And that's what the king is supposed to be. So you don't get a choice in who the king is. You don't vote for who the king is. He comes from a family that has that right to rule there. I think this really shows that the younger generations don't know much about our traditions, to be saying that they don't care very much about this at all. And that's deliberately done, to try and make out that the monarchy was a terrible system and all of these rich people, why should they have the wealth? When at the time when the monarchy was big, we had such a thing as noblesse oblige, which meant that the nobles were obliged to look after the peasants. And it was seen that we need to have these peasants so that these nobles that have the money can exercise charity, because charity is a good trait. And if we didn't have these people, then we wouldn't be able to give out this charity. And when you had just one ethnic group living together and you gave out the charity to the peasants, there was no chance of that to be siphoned off into another country. That wealth would stay within the system, and the peasant could rise up a class or what have you. Whereas now we have people from all over the world here, and charity goes out, and that charity or that wealth that's made within the country, it goes out to these other ethnic groups in these other countries. It all gets siphoned away. So I think young people don't really understand why we had a monarchy. Any thoughts on what these young people are saying here, Laura?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, I think if you want to learn anything positive about Britain, you're not going to learn that at school. You're certainly not going to learn that at university. You're not going to learn it from the media or TV or anything like that. I think you're going to have to learn it through seeking it out yourself, or speaking to older people, really. You know, maybe speaking to your grandparents or parents. But I do think that alternative media is on the rise, and like the legacy media does seem to be dying out. I read something this week about Vice. Vice News seeking bankruptcy or something. I think they're another one which are failing, just like BuzzFeed and all these other left-wing media outlets. So I do think that alternative media is on the rise. And that's why they suspend us, obviously, because they know that we have something to say that will potentially resonate with the British public. But we're doing all right on alternative platforms. I just think that we need to build up our own things, like we're having a revamp of the PA website at the moment. It's doing very well. It's the best performing sort of like nationalist or patriotic organization website in the country. It's even outperforming Reform and Britain First and UKIP. However, it could be better. So I just think it is very important to have alternative media, because if we don't have that, everything that people are seeing is just negative and anti-British. And people don't even understand the difference between like citizenship and ethnicity, or people don't understand how to work out like per capita You know, they'll see a newspaper article that says something like the majority of terror suspects are white. And then people will be like, oh, my God, you know, this right wing terrorism. And it's like, well, you know, we are the vast majority of the population, so you would expect that. But per capita, we're underrepresented. And then also, you know, you're a terror suspect, as you know, Sven, if you, you know, share something on social media, it doesn't mean that you want to go and bomb somebody. So people don't know how to think critically, really. They just know how to repeat what they're shown in the media, and it's something that we need to work on changing, and I do think that we are working on changing that.
Well, also, as we were saying earlier about the way that communities have been split up by diversity, I mean, in the past, younger people would have more contact, I think, with older people because they would go to the local pub when they were teenagers and they would meet the older people in the pub and they would learn about our history and about the ways that things are done. But I don't think young people really go to pubs anymore. They've decimated the pub system that we have. It's too expensive to actually go in there. And because you have all these different groups there within the community, there isn't so much of a sense of community anymore. So people aren't going to find this information out in the ways that they used to in the past. I mean, of course, they will find it on the alternative media, but they're not going to get taught it in schools. They're going to just be given this negative view of things. Well, Saatchi & Saatchi's research accompanies the launch of a new study from the media company entitled What the F is Going On. And just that in itself, the fact that they think that swearing in a title is a suitable name for a survey just shows you the low standards that we have within Britain now. I mean, there used to be a time when swearing used to be cut out from television programmes and then it was on after 11 o'clock at night. And now it's just accepted that it's okay to use that for a survey. The study documented the views of 13 people chosen at random across the UK about the state of the country. Researchers argued that people are really feeling the problems facing the country, and the report continued, those that are in poverty and dependent on food banks have felt this for a long time, but no one we spent time with was in that precarious a position. What we are now seeing is the impact of the national crisis upon people that are far better off by traditional standards. So they're saying it's not just the poor people that are having problems now, it's the middle class that are having problems. Hamid, a GP from Middlesbrough, told researchers, at my friend's practice in Bradford, there was a patient threatening to come down with a knife and stab everyone. And it's just madness. Society just seems to be angry. He added, I think people are angrier these days, whether or not COVID was like a catalyst for all of that, but people seem to be a lot less tolerant and a lot less willing to compromise. I mean, what could it possibly have been that made people less tolerant? Well, we're encouraged not to be tolerant anymore, aren't we? We used to be a country that used to say that we used to be very tolerant. We used to have lots of eccentrics. We used to have lots of different beliefs. And part of a democracy is understanding that not everybody might have the same beliefs. They might not all get along. You know, they used to say sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. And that was the way that people used to be brought up. And now we're told, oh, no, if anybody speaks up for white people, they're the worst of the worst. That's the equivalent of a violent crime going off if they happen to use an old-fashioned word for one of these minority groups, or they happen to abbreviate the name of one of these minority groups, then that's the equivalent of a violent crime. And you will be excused using violence to try and stop them from committing that crime, because that's what we're told now, isn't it? We're told that just using normal old-fashioned language, or what used to be normal language, is now the equivalent of violence. It's hate speech, and if therefore it's a crime, you know, we're expected to prevent people from carrying out crimes. So you could say, well, somebody could punch somebody in the mouth because they didn't like what they were saying, and they could say, well, I was trying to prevent them from coming out with hate speech. So we're not taught to be tolerant anymore. If you don't agree with the teaching of LGBTQ in schools, you'll be accused of being homophobic. You'll be frozen out. If you are against drag queen story hour, again, you'll be accused of being homophobic, transphobic. You'll be frozen out. I mean, even if you just happen to like things like golly dolls, or gollywogs, whatever you want to call them. This pub that had a collection of them that I talked about here on the Daily Nationalist, this pub that had a collection of these gollywogs, the police took the collection And there was a lot of information about it in the news. And then the beer company stopped selling them the beer. They stopped selling them the glasses. The best pub guide cut them out of the pub guide and said that they weren't going to serve them anymore. The windows got all smashed. People painted racist all along the walls. And now these poor people are going to have to leave the pub and move to Turkey, and simply because they had a fondness for an old dolly type that nobody saw as offensive 30 years ago, but apparently they do now. So where's the toleration there? I mean, the encouragement to be intolerant comes from the very people like this Sachin Sachi that sponsor these media campaigns and the entertainment. I mean, what do you think of what it has to say here, Laura?
Yeah, I mean, things are just changing constantly and people are expected to keep up with it. And if you don't keep up with it, you're the worst person ever and you've got to make public apologies, not just about stuff that you've said or done today, but about stuff from the past as well. I mean, have you seen that they've been changing and taking out certain words in certain books? Was it the Royal Dahl books, I think, where they're taking out certain words that, which are like offensive nowadays, but obviously they weren't back then. I mean, what happens in 5 or 10 years when the words change again, which are acceptable? Are we going to take more words out of the books? Like, how many words are we going to take out of the books? If something is a historical piece, just leave it. And you know, it's fine to say things back then which were acceptable to say back then. I don't think we can go around rewriting history. I mean, I do think we should be respectful to people, but it goes too far. I mean, at one point you couldn't say black person. Now black person is the correct thing to say, but in the future you won't be able to say black person again. It'll be something else. I mean, we're supposed to say person of colour, which I'm just not even entertaining because it sounds ridiculous. But and it's like the terminology for gay people. I think you can say gay at the minute. But they say, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this, but they call each other FAG. But we're not allowed to say that. But then there's like other things that I'm just going to be very careful here because I'm not sure what are the correct words at the moment. But it changes basically what you're allowed to say all the time. And people just have to keep up with that. But then if you don't have social media, if you don't follow stuff, you don't know what the new correct terminology is. And I think that people should just not entertain it. And if everyone doesn't entertain it, then they can't do anything about it. It really annoys me. And it really frustrates me when people bow down to it as well. And, you know, want to signal to everyone about how virtuous they are because they know the new in word. Like, apparently you and I are both cisgendered because we have the gender that we were born with, which is just another way of saying a normal person who doesn't attention seek. But it's like the new word, like we're cisgender, and it just winds me up.
So they have to add cis to it. They have to say that it's somehow different from the norm. I mean, one of the words that, quite surprisingly, that we're being told we shouldn't be using now is the acronym BAME. The government have said, you know, we shouldn't be using this term, black and minority ethnic, because
their own term that they made themselves, and now they're mad at their own term.
Yeah, they'll be changing that over the next 10 years. I think that will become a bad word. And they're saying what we should use is be more specific about these specific groups. And I'm quite happy to do that. You know, I think we should be as specific as possible about ethnicity and be basing things on ethnicity. And I want to see people identifying with their ethnicity. But even these words for these ethnicities, they get changed. You know, you're not allowed to use abbreviations. Even when you are trying to be specific, certain abbreviations you're just not allowed to use. And it all has this effect of causing people to censor themselves. That's the Indigenous British people. And then with the other groups that are actually here, it encourages them to be intolerant because it encourages them to look out for when people aren't using the most up-to-date language and then complain about it and report the people to the police. So, yeah, I agree. People are becoming far more intolerant than they ever were before, and it's a great shame. And a large part of it is based on these this idea of hate speech. Instead of saying, well, you're entitled to your opinion, and I'm very proud of the fact that we have free speech and we are entitled to have our opinions and share our opinions, we're told to say, oh no, that's forbidden. You're not allowed to have that kind of an opinion. You're not allowed to say anything negative about one of these groups. You're not even allowed to say anything negative about government policy involving one of these groups. So people have been encouraged to be intolerant. And I agree that people are becoming angrier about this. The study recommends that brands and businesses inject joy and pride into their advertising to cater to consumers. Are they going to actually inject pride in being British? I don't think so. They'll probably be injecting more gay pride into the advertising. Richard Huntington of Saatchi & Saatchi said the royal coronation is a significant cultural moment and one that the majority of our nation has not experienced in its lifetime. It was always going to kick off a conversation around how this country runs. The findings of our research and conversations with real people and well-known commentators speak for themselves. There's divide, fractures, and deeply concerning realities. A YouGov surveyed 1,999 adults between the 6th and the 10th of April this year. And looking at the title of this, it does actually mention ethnicity, an ethnograph or something like that, which is why I was interested in this. I wanted to find out what aspects of ethnicity there were that's involved in this. But as it's saying here, the results speak for themselves. There's division, there's fractures, deeply concerning realities. And all of that is just caused by multiculturalism. You know, if you didn't have multiculturalism and you had a government that was representative of the people that it was governing, they would have this family loyalty to the people that they were governing, and they wouldn't be putting up these prices on fuel. They wouldn't be selling off our electric stations and our water stations and our resources. They wouldn't be selling them off to other countries. They would be saying, well, we need to be responsible for that. And they would have this loyalty to their people that we don't see because we have multiculturalism. The same way that diversity breaks up these communities, it also breaks up the loyalty that the people in government have to their own people, because you've got people in government as representatives of all these different communities. They're obviously going to be wanting to do what's best for their people, and what's best for their people might not be best for one of these other people. So you end up with the country literally being pulled in all these different directions, and that results in the division and the fractures which it's actually talking about here. So of course they're not going to come to these same conclusions with this study, but I do think it just shows the failure of multiculturalism. Any thoughts on this, Laura?
No, just that I agree with you really, and I think that as the demographics continue to change while we work on stopping them, it's just going to become more and more relevant, what you've just said. I mean, people do vote on racial lines. I remember seeing a video of some young Muslim girls recently. I think it was on Channel 4. I said recently, it was a few years ago. And they were asked who they were going to vote for. And they said, oh, is there a Muslim candidate? Is there a non-white candidate? And they was like, oh, no. And then they were just like, oh, not interested then. People do vote on racial lines. And the Tories know that. That's where they, you know, if there's a very non-white area, they'll stand a black candidate. They're not stupid. So I just think as the demographics of the country continue to change, it will be harder and harder for us to have success in this area. And that's why we can't put all our eggs in one basket and only focus on elections. There's so much more that we need to be doing. In fact, Mark has just called me while I'm streaming with you and told me off for not answering. But he sent me a message on Telegram and said that the one nationalist seat in the whole of the UK with regards to the local elections, we've just lost it, apparently, the British Democrats, we've just lost it. So, yeah, it's just not an avenue that we do well in or have ever really done well in. And as the demographics continue to change, it's going to become harder and harder. And I just think our focus needs to be elsewhere, really.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a shame to hear that about the British Democrats, but people do naturally want to vote for people that look like themselves. And it should just be seen as a natural instinct to have, but we're told that that's wrong if you're white. And obviously this program that you were highlighting there, Laura, I mean, it basically shows that Muslims would rather be ruled by other Muslims, which to me, it just seems like common sense. But if you say white people would rather be ruled by white people, oh no, well, that's racist to say that's white supremacist. It's not. It's just natural, you know, that we just feel more comfortable and more content when we're actually among our own people. Well, I've got one other subject that I wanted to have a look at. It isn't specifically about Britain. It's about the EU and around Twitter. The European Commission announced last Tuesday a slew of social media platforms and other big tech websites that will come under stricter content moderation surrounding so-called hate speech and disinformation by the summer. Under the EU's recently adopted Digital Services Act, which the bloc has described as providing an unprecedented level of public oversight on the internet, the European Commission will place at least 19 online platforms under its strictest level of censorship by August 25th. Announcing the measure, European Commissioner for Internal Market Thierry Breton said, "With great scale comes great responsibility," adding, "They will not be able to act as if they are too big to care." So far, the Commission has identified Alibaba, AliExpress, Amazon Store, Apple App Store, Bing, Booking.com, Facebook, Google Play, Google Maps, Google Search, Google Shopping, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Snapchat, TikTok, Twitter, Wikipedia, YouTube, and Zalando as those in need of stricter content moderation. I do wonder what sort of content moderation Google Maps.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. How do you have hate speech on Google Maps?
Yeah, I do not understand that.
How do you have hate speech on AliExpress, which is like a foreign eBay?
Yeah, probably it's probably talking about something else, but you know, like maybe to do with tax returns or maybe to do with advertising elsewhere. I really don't understand about Google Maps. I mean, Google search function is broken by all the censorship, but what they're talking about here is getting rid of hate speech and having more oversight. The Digital Services Act specifies that websites or online platforms with at least 45 million users within the EU will come under more regulatory scrutiny under the premise that they hold a special responsibility to police the internet and provide safety for their user base, with the legislation greatly expanding the ability of Brussels to police so-called hate speech and disinformation. So that's specifically what it's for. Perhaps they're bringing it in a sneaky way. Perhaps they're bringing it in under a bill that is to do with something else that includes all of these other websites. But the purpose of it is actually to create more censorship. Those that fail to comply with the censorship law by February 24 will face fines from the EU of up to 6% of their global revenue, as well as face a potential ban from Europe entirely. The driving force behind the legislation, Thierry Breton, a former French tech executive, has previously warned new Twitter boss Elon Musk that the micro-blogging site could run the risk of being banned in the European Union should it restore the free speech roots of the country. Of the company. Although the bill claims to try to protect free speech, Breton himself has backed big tech taking censorship into their own hands, seemingly expressing support for Twitter's decision to ban then-President Donald Trump in 2021, saying that tech companies have recognised their responsibility, duty and means to prevent the spread of illegal viral content. The announcement on Tuesday is just the latest challenge facing Twitter since Elon Musk took over the platform. Earlier this month, prosecutors in Berlin announced that they've opened up legal action against the platform under Germany's Network Enforcement Act for failing to purge illegal content such as hate speech and insults. Should the case be successful, the Silicon Valley giant could face a fine of up to 50 million euros. While Twitter chief Elon Musk has expressed a desire to facilitate free speech on his platform, he has also said that Twitter will abide by local laws of governments around the world, such as in the EU, where there are not robust First Amendment-style protections for free speech like in the United States. And I think he may end up regretting saying that, because Gab refused to say that. They said, no, we're going to abide by United States law, and if you don't like that in Germany, well, tough, because Germany wrote to Gab and said that they needed to remove all these things or they were going to be fined or what have you. And they said, look, we're an American company and we come under American law. So for Twitter to then start abiding by European Union law, because they'd have to make that worldwide, it would mean that a lot of things just couldn't be said anymore. When you think of Germany, which has the strictest free speech laws, I mean, you're not even allowed to investigate World War II in Germany. You're not allowed to ask questions about it. And yet in America, you are. So it's going to cause all these problems. People are putting Elon Musk forward as this great big protector of free speech, and there has been a slight increase in free speech on Twitter, I think, but there are still lots of people that are still having their Twitters taken away with no explanation for it, Radio Albion Twitter was taken away the other day with no warnings on the account, no flagged tweets, not even an argument in the 4 years that it had actually been on there for, and it was just taken down. And they said, oh, after careful consideration, we've decided you broke the rules. Didn't tell me what rules it was that I'd actually broken. And I think the same happened to you, didn't it, Laura? What do you make of Elon Musk and Twitter?
Yeah, well, I got suspended like 2.5 years ago now for the first time. And then when Musk took over, we all got, well, not all of us, but a lot of people got our Twitter accounts back. Me, Mark, Pierre got our Twitter accounts back. And then I think it was a couple of months ago now, we all got suspended again. So everyone from Patriotic Alternative got suspended on the same day at the same time, and none of us were given a reason. So obviously we all didn't break a rule on the same day at the same time. They were just getting rid of everyone from PA. They've never actually sent us an email to tell us what rules we've broken. However, if we log into our accounts, it does come up saying that you broke the Twitter terms and conditions, but doesn't tell us which one. And if we appeal the decision, what they do is they quietly close the appeal without contacting us. And then if we go back to add some further information to the appeal, they go, oh, we've closed this because you didn't get back to us when we contacted you. It's like you never contacted us. So they're basically just shutting our accounts down, not telling us why, and then not closing any appeal that we have and not giving us a chance to appeal. Not we can do about it, you just got to live with it. I mean, it was nice being back on there for a few months because we absolutely smashed it. We were growing our accounts by like thousands of followers every month, and we were just ratioing everyone that we encountered. And it was good to remember the support that we have from the public, because when you sort of on, you know, back platforms like Telegram and Odyssey, when everyone on there is already a nationalist, you do realise like how much your views do resonate with the British public. And it was a nice reminder to have that again. So I'm glad that we did get it back for a couple of months. But I mean, on Twitter, our URL, patrioticalternative.org.uk, is banned. You can't post it. So they've completely banned us. And then you might think, oh, well, is it to do with laws in our country? I haven't broken any laws anywhere. But in America, where they've got the First Amendment, they've done the same to NJP. They've banned all their guys, and they've banned the link to their website where they're highlighting crimes towards white people. I mean, there was the guy, Jamie, I believe his nickname was, who jumped to defend his 6-year-old daughter and saved her life. They're highlighting that because the media are trying to say that it was a fight over a basketball or something, and he's like, no, this guy came in to attack us because we were white. They're highlighting stuff like that, and they're stopping them from being able to do it. So and like, you got suspended a few days ago, a lot of other people that I know also got suspended a few days ago, so there's just been this big purge again, no one ever given a reason why. So yeah, Musk's Twitter is just as bad, if not worse, than before, because they're actually banning URLs now. And I've just had a look, you know, because it mentioned in this article that we're discussing, I've just Googled Patriotic Alternative to see where our website is. We're on the bottom of the fourth page in the search results for our actual website. Before you get to our website, you get articles from Hope Not Hate, articles from Antifa, articles from the press that are just absolutely full of lies. And all of these mainstream platforms, they don't give us an opportunity to represent ourselves in an honest way. And again, it's a compliment because it means that they worry that our views, which are perfectly reasonable views, will resonate with people. So they don't want people to hear us. So they have to suspend us and bury us from everywhere. They have to create these stupid hate speech laws. I mean, hate speech doesn't even exist. It sounds like something out of an Orwell novel. They have to create these crazy hate speech laws where you're not allowed to cite certain facts because it could, I don't know, encourage violence or what is it that Sam's been doing for distributing written material with the intention to stir up racial hatred. So even though he hasn't used any slurs, hasn't told anybody to commit violence, hasn't done anything like that, because he's sharing statistics which are uncomfortable, which come from our very own government, by the way, apparently he's intending to stir up racial hatred. Just rubbish. I mean, we do pretty well on Telegram, and we do pretty well on Odyssey, but that's why we created Patriotic Alternative as an IRL movement, because we knew that we couldn't rely on the internet for long. And we're having big successes with these protests. We had Long Eaton a couple of weekends ago. Again, you know, the police on the day were totally unprepared for the amount of people that were there, and a lot of the public couldn't get to us, but it was still a really good protest. Cannock, Skegness, Erskine, Hull, Cottingham, Linton, Seacroft, we've had these amazing protests where we're leafleting and we're sending out messages to our mailing list and we're putting advertisements on our website, and people are turning up and they are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I just think IRL is the way to go, really. We can't rely on these platforms forever unless we create our own platform. Obviously, that's something that you've done with Radio Albion, and I know you do very well on that. But again, you know, go back to the point that I made earlier about self-sufficiency and not relying on our enemies, whether that be their system of government or their social media platforms. I just think we all always need to stand on our own 2 feet.
Yeah, that's essential, you know, to be self-sufficient. And it's the same for the country, for the nation, as it is with these social media companies. I think we have more and more startups by people that want to preserve free speech. You know, you got Gab, got Odyssey. And I do wonder if Elon Musk is genuine about this, and yet it's just something that's being done without his knowledge. Or it could be that there is a clause about something to do with genocides, not denying genocides. And of course, somebody might be able to say, well, because they're investigating World War II and they query this aspect of World War II, they're therefore denying a genocide. So that's why the account has been banned. But I can see that if the EU is going to be really strict on what they're wanting, and Elon Musk is genuine about preserving free speech, he could end up with Twitter literally being banned from the EU. We'll have to see whether he digs his heels in and whether he does support free speech or whether he's going to bend his will to the European Union. I hope he does dig his feet in. And either way, I think it's going to draw more attention to the censorship problems that we are having. And of course, it's very good that PA are doing so well and having all these protests this year, and all the hard work is finally paying off. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Laura.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a very busy couple of weeks, but it's nice to just, you know, kind of slot in an hour for a conversation with you. And I hope that I've, done all right with the answers and that, and happy to stream again. And maybe Sam could come on one day and talk to you about some stuff. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would definitely be good. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Do remember to check out earlier episodes of Real Britannia in our archive. And of course, we do hope you have a great week ahead of you.